Welcome to Puentes, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is State of New Mexico Aging and Long-Term Services Department, ALTSD, Cabinet Secretary Gino Rinaldi. He was appointed Cabinet Secretary by Governor Susana Martinez in January 2013 and had served as ALTSD Deputy Secretary since October 2011. Rinaldi was also appointed by President Bill Clinton to the White House Conference on Aging Advisory Committee. Thank you for joining me on Puentes.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So the key reason for being here is...
What I've been doing is visiting some programs and staff so that I can get a feel for what are the issues out here. Because as we prepare for the next legislative session, we're looking at what the funding needs are. And so I think it's important for folks to know that the department has been able over the last 3 years to receive additional dollar for funding of programs. And we were hit pretty hard during the economic downturn, but the governor's office has been very supportive of us putting forth additional requests. And we've been able to put forth additional dollars to the programs. The legislature has also been very supportive in supporting these executive requests. So I think this is one of those programs where you see just people saying, hey, it's about our elders, our vulnerable adults. We just work together to meet that need. It is a fun department for me to be involved with because I'm able to just be the deliverer of a message, and I get the support. And I don't find people saying, this is bad, we shouldn't do this. No, it's people recognize it. New Mexico gets it. And a bit of trivia. New Mexico, another leader in the nation with regards to its support of senior programming. This state supports its seniors better than most states in the nation. And other states are envious of what this state puts forth with regards to helping its older adults. It gets it. It does it right.
You've been working in with the elderly, the disabled, for many years, not just in New Mexico. You were in Denver. When did you start? What was your passion to get involved with this?
I always say, for me, I think it was a natural because I was very close to my grandparents. They live right next door, and we were always over there. So I think we had that natural extended family touch with our grandparents. They were the only grandparents I had, grandma and grandpa. Others I didn't have. They had all passed on. And so I think that sort of was a passion, a love. And then I always say that I really got into it because my mother kind of, to keep me out of trouble before I went into the military, she had me driving the bus at the senior center because she was running the programs, you know, and I still really love driving the seniors around. And so that was there. But I went into the military, and while I was in Utah, I had the opportunity. Actually, I gravitated toward that opportunity. I was tired of working swing shift and then working a job during the day. So I decided might as well go back to school. And when I did, I was introduced to gerontology. And there was a professor in Utah that engaged me in gerontology, which in turn engaged me in school. So it was following your passion and then figuring it all out. It's kind of invent the goal and figure it out. So I did the education and then I started doing the work.
Tell us about the Department of Aging and Long-Term Services. How long has it been around?
Well, the department was put together as a initiative of one of your leaders down here in the South, Representative Paul Taylor. He had this vision of trying to create a department that sort of facilitated a continuum of services for adults, particularly in our situation, older adults. And the department was developed around 2004. It has been rocking and rolling ever since.
Well, there's a lot of different things within the department. Tell us, what does the department do and who does it serve?
The department is comprised of four different divisions. Of course, administratively, we definitely have to have that component. But we also have the Aging Network Division, which is where your Older Americans Act programs, such as the senior centers, the volunteer programs, Alzheimer's Association, savvy caregiver programs, or respite type programs, or educational resources. The Senior Olympics, who they just recently had their qualifying games in Roswell. That's another one of the programs we work with. We work with every tribe, the Apache Nations and the Navajo Nations, in terms of working with their senior programs to ensure that they have funding as well as technical assistance and are doing what needs to be done for their older adults. And we also have the Adult Protective Services Division, which was one of the groups that I was visiting out here when I was here. I have about 27 different offices throughout the state, and predominantly most of them are Adult Protective Services. And that is where we are statutorily required to do, I guess, protect older adults or adults who are subject of abuse, neglect, or financial exploitation.
And do you see a lot of that here in New Mexico?
Unfortunately, we do. And we receive about almost 12,000 reports, and we conduct about 7,000 investigations, and we substantiate well over 1,500. And the majority of who we substantiate and investigate are older adults, and it's self-neglect. And so that's a real issue. And when you break it down even further, you'll see that the highest incidence centers around older adult women.
In what way?
Well, oftentimes it can be as a result of an illness. Someone who's living alone without much formal or informal support, but they've been doing fine, and all of a sudden they get ill, and this illness has weakened them or caused them to not be able to really meet their basic needs, their daily needs, and so they're not eating right, they might not be hydrating, they might begin to forget to take their medications, or they might begin to get a bit confused or malnourished, or a lot of other activities, and it's sort of a gradual spiral downward. And eventually what may wind up happening is this person falls, and then they find themselves in a situation where no one is there to help them. And we find folks that it's been a couple of days that they've been down, or a neighbor calls very concerned about, you know, Mrs. Smith or Mr. Jones or somebody that may normally at least come out and get the mail and whatnot and get the paper, and they find that nothing's happening. And so we go in and we find that this individual has deteriorated to a point where they can no longer really care for themselves, or they are in danger to themselves. And we may have to intervene at that point. And it may result in emergency placement. It may result in us bringing in supportive services or taking the person to a hospital and trying to at least get them back to a baseline and where they're safe, and perhaps they may be able to remain in their home, or we may have to move towards institutionalization, which is not really what we would like to do.
Here, let's say in Las Cruces or Doñana County, what organization would be going out to visit the
person? It's the Adult Protective Services Unit for Southern New Mexico. They do services in Doñana County, Grant County, Hidalgo County, Catron County, Sierra County, all in the southern area. There's a regional office here. And folks, if they need to call, I would suggest they call our ADRC, which is a centralized intake. And that number is 1-800-432-2080.
So that's the Aging and Disability Resource Center.
Yes. One of the things that I think might be helpful is that we've kind of categorized challenges that the department sort of is faced with, or that we see that we're trying to focus on. And one of them is the safety, public safety. And it's not like we're law enforcement, but we do have the protective services. But we also have the Ombudsman Program, who works with folks in long-term care settings where they advocate on their behalf. They try to look at issues, maybe something that is really significant, like their meals or medications or whatever in the facility, and that they feel that there's some issues. They advocate on their behalf. There may be issues related to just their care and whatnot. So we have these volunteers that are in every nursing facility statewide. And we also are working on residential care centers where we visit those care centers. And we have a staff throughout the state that works in that area. And then another one of the challenges is the issue of hunger. And New Mexico ranked last year number 2 in the nation with regards to seniors at risk of hunger. And one of the things that we really attempt to do in the state of New Mexico, many people know that we are the senior centers and we provide meals at the centers, as well as home-delivered meals. However, outreach is really critical. We really need to try to reach out to the community, try to meet the needs. And it's often been said, you know, we provide a lunch for an individual, but what if they're really at risk and they're not able to have breakfast or they're not able to have dinner, what do you do? So we're trying to identify and assess those folks that are really at risk, and then we try to intervene by providing additional resources and assistance. And so that's a real challenge. We've provided over 3.5 million meals in the state of New Mexico, and we've serviced close to 50,000 individuals where they have received meals. So we're meeting a need, but this need continues to grow. The other issue that we're dealing with is caregiving. I mean, we have just a huge, I think really, we don't really even have a real strong sense of what is transpiring in the state of New Mexico surrounding caregiving. We're estimating that some 400,000 individuals in the state of New Mexico at some point at any given time are providing care for a loved one. And it doesn't necessarily have to mean preparing meals, you're transporting them, you're lifting them up, you're helping them. There's a lot of range with regards to the caring of an individual, whether it be checking on them on a daily basis, ensuring that they have what they need. My mom is always calling me, and I'm always calling her, asking her how she's doing, is there something she needs, and she tells me, I have the water filter in the refrigerator, I bought it, I can't put it in because I don't have the strength in my wrist because I hurt it, or the arthritis is bugging me, so can you come over and put it in? Go over, you check, and then you do this, you do that. It's sort of the things that we feel we're doing, but as someone ages, there's more and more things that individuals may or may not be able to do. And then you start getting into issues related to illness or mobility issues. And so that issue continues. So we're trying to look at a multitude of ways that we can help folks, whether it be through respite programs, whether it be through the services that we do with the senior programs. There's other types of resources out there that we try to help folks find or we can do. And some programs have homemaker opportunities where they can send someone in to do homemaker services. There's adult daycare programs. So there's a multitude of services. And again, that number, 1-800-432-2080, is the resource center where they can connect you with the necessary resources. And if you happen to know the senior program, you can contact the staff there. You can walk in and ask them to assist you with finding the resources, and then they too can contact us at the resource center and try to deal with that.
And how do you know if an individual is by themselves and that needs caregiving? Because a lot of times people don't open up.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you find that out?
Well, we're very private individuals. We're very self-reliant. And then, you know, the law protects people, you know, it gives them the right to be left alone. And so sometimes that isn't an easy task. And oftentimes when you know of somebody needing help, they don't want it. They can take care of their own self. And we're taught that we should let people take care of their own. So it isn't an easy task. But like I said, if you have a suspect and you're not the expert to be able to assess it, like I said, 12,000 calls, we narrowed it down to around 7,000 investigations. So as you can see, over 4,000 of those, there may not have been a real need. But even then, we have taken those calls and channeled them through the resource center, and there may be other resources that can help. But if you really suspect it or really aren't sure, you should make that call. My feeling is if your neighbor is going out there every day to get their mail or to pick up the newspaper or at least to water their plants, and what you notice is that the plants are dead or the papers are stacking up, and they didn't tell you that they were going away, there may be something going on.
So this is where a neighborhood watch, yes, in some way comes in.
My feeling is like my grandmother and her sister there in Taos had this system. They would put a towel out of the window and they would tell the other that they were up. And so that was a way that they knew. And so when I said informal, there's a lot of ways people do that. They check on them. And so it's not like you really have to formalize any kind of neighborhood watch. Oftentimes the gas man, the postman are very helpful in informing us of problems. And then some of the other things that we do is we really do have an emphasis on healthy living, healthy aging. The Senior Olympics is a perfect example. We had a 92-year-old individual who was participating in the games. And so there's really no age limit. It's just you, your own self, as an individual. And it's about keeping active. Today at the center, one of the ladies mentioned to me about the highlight of an individual's day can be coming to that center because they have a disability or mobility impairment or something. And so they really can't get out, but they can get to the center. The van comes, picks them up, brings them. And so that's the highlight of the day. It gives them the socialization. It gives them the engagement, the nutritious meal. And so it gets them out, active. And you have it from that level all the way to fitness classes, to learning how to manage your chronic diseases. And we do programs like that, enhanced fitness, chronic disease, self-management, and whatnot. Because as the former cabinet secretary, Retta Ward, once said, better to live, die. And what the point there is, your emphasis is on maintaining activity for as long as possible. Everything that the research shows is that even a person who is wheelchair bound, if they move their arms and whatever they can do, it is better for them in so many different ways, digestion, circulatory, everything. And they have a better quality of life.
Have you found that some people are reluctant to attend? What are some of the misconceptions about going to a senior center?
That senior centers are for old people? It's all in your mind. I think it's individual. My mom didn't want to go. And here she was, a woman who was part of an advocate to help create senior programs nationally. She ran programs. She knows what it is. And she's 81, going to be 82. And she was all about not, well, I'll go when I need to. Well, recently she needed to. And I'm like, will you please go? And so sometimes it takes me or the kid, the son or the daughter or the friend or the husband to coax the person to go. Other times folks just want to go. There's a lot of activities going on at a lot of these centers. There's sewing, there's ceramics, there's traveling, there's painting, there's just a lot of types of activities that folks may very well be interested in, and they find that the reason to go. They may not even eat there. Might not be the reason that they're going. They might not need any other services, but they're going there for activities. I think in the Older Americans Act, it sort of targeted those in the greatest economic and social need. So it's not a means tested, while economics is an issue, but social need. And we found that when we talk about active, if somebody's totally socially disengaged, they don't eat, they don't take care of themselves, they forget to take their meds, and then they become candidates for our adult protective services intervention with self-neglect. So we really do see it as one of our interventions is to keep people as active as possible, give them that opportunity to choose to.
So a lot of times thinking adult protective services, you're not protecting them against being hurt by family members. Do some go through that?
Yes, that's an issue. We have issues with caregiver abuse. We have issue with someone else that maybe knows them and there's abuse there. And then we have issues related to financial exploitation. That is probably one of the growing ones that we see. And we've seen an increase in that as we had the issue related to the economic downturn. And that's one of those ones where education is critical. And those are some of the things that we do at the centers at various opportunities to educate folks that you have to be careful who you trust your bank account with. When people suspect that someone is taking advantage of an individual, they can call us as well. Again, 1-800-432-2080, and report it and let us do the investigation.
A lot of people also volunteer. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how people can help volunteer and keeping things going.
Volunteerism has always been the core of what makes America great, is that we step up to the plate when we need to step up to the plate. And I always say that the older adults comes from, you know, the saying, the greatest generation and whatnot. But it is their ability to step up and do what they feel needs to be done. And in the case of senior programs, volunteers drive a lot of what takes place. I mean, there's staff, but we have limited funding for the staff, and the role of the staff is primarily directed to meals, transportation, and other types of supportive services. But as far as like assisting the program with activities or developing, the whole Senior Olympic Initiative is driven a lot on volunteerism. There's folks that volunteer to deliver meals, home-delivered meals. There's people that volunteer to serve the meals. There's people that volunteer to drive the folks. And so there's just all types of different levels of volunteerism. Some of the folks today talked about the volunteerism centering around maintaining their program, the facility, doing the work, raising some funding to help keep the there's a leak in the roof to try to do some of that stuff. So there's a lot of those types of opportunities. And then we have some very formalized volunteer opportunities through the Senior Companions Program or through the Retired Senior Volunteer Program or through the Foster Grandparent Program. The foster grandparents provide services with at-risk youth in the elementary kindergarten age range. The senior companions, they do visiting, home visiting of homebound elders and try to work with them and visit with them and help them in whatever way they can. And then the Retired Senior Volunteer Program basically is anywhere there's a need for volunteerism, so we try to connect people with that opportunity.
And another opportunity coming up to learn more about it is a workshop that's going to be happening in August.
It's actually a conference. It's the 36th annual New Mexico Conference on Aging, and it's going to be held at the Isleta Casino and Conference Center in Isleta by Albuquerque. And that conference, if you're interested, is where we do just all types of educational workshops, anything from issues with regards to the Affordable Care Act, issues related to Social Security, or some of the types of needs that elders might have. We also, our second year running, we're doing speed dating. We're keeping up with the times, a lot of fitness and workshops, a lot of vendors with a lot of information. And if folks are interested, it's on August 19th and 20th. It's at the Isleta Resort and Casino Conference Center. If you want to do reservations or check into this, you can call 505-222-4500. Also, you can check with your senior program, because some of the programs have facilitated opportunities to take people to the conference for a day or even the two-day conference. Again, it's something that's been around for a long time, and it's just a tremendous amount of information. We get around 1,300 to 1,400 folks that attend.
The Aging and Long-Term Services Department has been around for 10 years now, and there's a lot of information. I really appreciate you coming down, and I think people can find out more information also on your website.
Well, you can go to New Mexico Aging. You can Google it and just put NM Aging, and then you'll get our website. And there's a tremendous amount of information on resources, events, stuff that we talked about, healthy lifestyles, so what we're doing there. So please feel free to visit it.
Well, thank you so much, Secretary Gino Rinaldi for the State of New Mexico Aging and Long-Term Services Department.
Thank you.
You're welcome. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.